Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for This Week in YouTube is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is This Week in YouTube, Episode 8, recorded June 2nd, 2013. Tay Zonde. It's time for This Week in YouTube, the show where we talk about the latest and greatest from YouTube, the hottest videos, YouTube suggestions, good channels, and we interview YouTube greats. Joining me right now, our host, Mr. Lamar Wilson, who is himself a YouTuber. Hello, Lamar.
Hey, Leo, how are you today?
And a nationally ranked chess player.
From many, many years ago.
That's great. You and I, yeah. We're going to play some. I had no idea. I love chess.
Yes, I am extremely rusty, so I will. I'm probably playing at 1200 level right now.
So
I'm going to need to strengthen up a little bit.
I was telling you before the show, chess.com is a great website. I joined it, and you can play masters and people all over the world, and it's so much fun.
I used to travel to different tournaments like around the country.
Me too.
Yeah.
It was fun. Wow. The day before my first wedding, I played in the U.S. Open, but that was a mistake. I wasn't really focused.
I wonder why.
Wasn't really focused. Also here, Chad Johnson of the Red Head.
Yeah, it's a nation. We're a sovereign nation of the Red Head Nation.
That's a good nation to be a red. What happens though if your hair goes other colors?
You boot it out. Your visa just expires. Yeah,
I'm in the gray haired nation, and I never have to worry about that.
Is Dr. Doom your sovereign lord?
Right. It's a very posh echelon of folks who can sport the red hair. Yeah, and then also Clifford the big red dog. He hangs around all the time.
Chattington the big red dog. Yeah.
We really enjoy our corporate sponsorships. It's great.
Many people think of him as Wendy's evil brother.
Wendell, I love that.
Yeah. hey, we have a great guest on the show today, and we're so glad to have him. Why don't you introduce him, Lamar? Because he's a friend of yours, I understand.
A friend of mine, a longtime YouTuber, one of my best friends. He is so knowledgeable about YouTube, viral hit, but sustaining person on YouTube. Like to represent Mr. Tay Zonde.
Oh, my God. I'm so happy to meet you, Tay.
Thank you so much for having me.
Huge fan. Many people remember his charting hit, Chocolate Rain.
It was kind of a first in that it was a semi-professional experience that you saw just explode. I mean, I remember hanging out with my friends and was just like, have you seen this video of this guy singing? Like, it's amazing.
There was other stuff exploding on YouTube at the time. Soulja Boy kind of had his Crank That song. A month later, Chris Crocker had to leave Britney Alone. Chocolate Rain was kind of the clean, marketable thing.
Right, Britney Alone. Really? Chocolate Rain and Leave Britney Alone are at the same...
Yeah.
Wow.
I remember...
About 2007. The same time. Yeah.
I remember watching a Fox News broadcast that Tay was actually on with...
Oh, you remember that? Is that the one where they
played? With Dan Brown. And they played Leave Britney Alone with There's an F-bomb in it, and they didn't censor it. And they went, sorry about that. And yeah. Definitely part of the time.
F-bombs in Chocolate Rain. Actually, Chocolate Rain was a political song. It was an activist song. I don't know how many people really knew that.
A lot of people will just say, hey, you know, it's a catchy beat. My two-year-old can't stop singing it at bedtime.
I couldn't stop singing it, Tay. People were getting mad at me.
Oh.
Because I'd come in, I'd go, Chocolate Rain, some stray dry while others feel the pain. That's all anybody knows, by the way. That's why they don't know what it's about.
I'll be spotted just like at the mall now, and people be like, Chocolate Rain. They don't even remember the lyrics.
Right.
It's just kind of iconic.
Go ahead. No, talk about the phone. I'll come back. Go ahead.
Oh, no, you were going to go.
Oh, are we going to do this?
Don't be polite. Stop it? Just not going to. All right, I'm going to ask a question. Tay, what's the genesis? Was that your first? That wasn't your first YouTube video, or was it?
It was not my first YouTube video. I had been singing and playing at open mics in Minneapolis, where I lived at the time. YouTube was much more convenient. I actually liked that you got honest feedback posting music on YouTube, which you usually don't get at open mics in small cafes. And I uploaded Chocolate Rain in April of 2007. Didn't go viral right away. And then that summer, someone posted it on Digg.com. That dates it. Someone saw it on Digg, posted it on 4chan, and it kind of blew up from there. And, you know, it was really kind of the first incident where someone did something on the internet and then got mainstream media attention. Since then, there's been Antoine Dodson, there's been Rebecca Black, all these other examples. But when it happened to me, there were really no breadcrumbs to follow. I couldn't be like, oh, you know, what did so-and-so do when this happened to them? So it was kind of this new experience to have a video on the internet and then, whoa, I'm on Jimmy Kimmel. Whoa, you know, I'm opening for Girl Talk at one of their shows. And it was just a very exciting time.
I would like to think that there's an alternate universe out there where the open
Chocolate
mic
Chocolate Rain
nights,
is playing all the time.
Right, no, where the open mic nights became the viral hit, and then you just have these coffee shops that are just filled with people trying
to see
Zonde sing.
Yeah.
So there were really no rules when all of this happened. How did you kind of deal, like, what was the progression of trying to figure out how to manage this sort of celebrity that was forced upon you?
It was weird because really I was very much a nerd making music as a hobby in my living room. And all of a sudden, you know, there's this inundation of people wanting me to sing at their kids' bar mitzvah, sing at their corporate parties, sing at their weddings, you know, perform live, open for the products, meet with all different types of literary agents and anyone connected with entertainment. There's just this huge gold rush when someone is perceived to be going viral. And I didn't feel ready to be more than a nerd making music in my living room as a hobby, no matter how much there might have been an opportunity to become Akon or you know, perhaps a more seasoned performer. That's not where I was in my art. And I still knew that I needed time to grow and develop and figure out who I wanted to be as an artist. So that was the tension, is everyone's telling me, hey, strike while the iron is hot. Three of the four major labels at the time wanted to sign me. And it was kind of this thing where I had to say, hey, I'm going to stick with this YouTube thing and maybe take opportunities as they come. But I still need to grow and develop as an artist.
Wow, that's brave. That's really brave. You turned down record labels?
There was definitely interest in signing me and kind of this idea of striking while the iron is hot.
Right.
Of, you know, getting something out there while my name is out there and whatnot. And I really had to. I was also in graduate school at the time, too.
What were you studying?
I was in the third year of the doctorate program in American Studies at the University of Minnesota. That's kind of as broad as it sounds, but it's pretty much history. I was studying the history of theater and social change.
Wow.
So this was happening in the middle of my still being committed to being in grad school, and I didn't just want to drop out. So I basically decided to keep putting videos on YouTube and take opportunities as they came, but you know, not give up my life as an academic right away. Eventually, I finished with a master's degree and moved to LA and pursued entertainment full time. But I wasn't really ready to do that right in 2007.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel that the your decision to kind of not deal with the labels was a sound one? Because do you feel like they would have just put you on a shelf or kept you?
Definitely. I mean, you can look at so many YouTube artists. Tara Naomi is a fabulous example, amazingly talented singer who I think she blew up with her song Say It's Possible on YouTube in 2006, one of the first artists to blow up. And she was signed by a major label, I believe, in 2006. And it, you know, it just wasn't a positive experience for her to move in that direction. And so I think I made the right choice for me, because I also feel like as I've continued to upload videos to YouTube, and as luckily there's still been an audience there for them on YouTube, I've grown and changed tremendously as an artist. So YouTube has been a great place to do that.
Yeah, I got to say, one of the things I've always admired about you is that you have a longevity. You know, there are some people who are viral hits, they're one-offs, and you don't hear from them anymore. And you stayed around, and I know people only know you as Chocolate Rain, but you've done so much more since 2007. Like, can you give us some examples of that?
People stop me from this stuff sometimes. They like, you're a mean one, Mr. Grinch. I get that one. and even the songs that I put up that I don't think anyone watches them, everyone hates them, I'll set it to private. And there's always a couple people coming out of the woodwork who are like, gosh, you know, Chasing Eden, that's my favorite song. What did you do with that? So you know, there's the audience is complicated in that way. And it's I feel very lucky to have Chocolate Rain as kind of the calling card that the most people are familiar with. But people are fans of all sorts of things that I do.
How much money did you make on Chocolate Rain?
That's a good question.
I don't know
if I'm going to answer that.
Well, yeah, don't have to. It's none of my business. You have 91 million views. Did they monetize? Did you put advertising on it right away? Did they even do that in those days?
The YouTube Partner Program started, I believe, around when I entered it. It was November of 2007.
So,
and at that time, it was very exclusive. Over the years, it became less and less exclusive, and eventually, YouTube got out of the business of managing partners entirely. So. Now I think anyone can actually put ads on their YouTube video, and then talent management has now been outsourced to networks.
So, okay, let's see if I can narrow it down. You still make money from it?
I do. You know, I would
enough
say
to live on?
I would say that between YouTube and opportunities that have emerged from YouTube, I am able to live fairly comfortably, you know, and... Hey, I mean, as long as you're able to wake up every day and do what you love, I call that success.
Well, and that's the reason I ask. I'm not interested in your particular financial situation, but I am interested in, for others who are watching, if this is a worthwhile pursuit, if it's a hobby or if it's a career, if there's money in it or if it's just something you do for fun.
I would say it's a hobby that can become a career. And that's the great thing about YouTube is you never really know. Sometimes you find an audience accidentally, and then that becomes a new direction for your life and can be a changing experience. So I think it's like many other things in life. If it grows to that scale, then sure, you can make a living off of it.
Right.
Are you looking to do any like other type of voice work? Obviously, I know people tell you, oh, you should do movie trailers. You should do this. But what are you looking to do?
I'd love to do. I'm pursuing voice work. I'm pursuing acting, film work. What's interesting is that as I've been in L.A. almost 5 years now, what it means to pursue on-camera work and voice work and what have you is changing very quickly because of YouTube, because of all the venture capital and YouTube networks and kind of this digital media remaking Hollywood. What it means to pursue a career in film or television is still changing.
Well, a lot of the people that watch the show are probably kind of aspiring creators. And I wanted to ask, there seems to almost be two ways to tackle YouTube as a career, to try to make money. And that is, one, to upload consistently and sort of grow your audience over time, or sort of what you did where you broke in. It was a super viral hit. And I see a lot of people trying to only get that viral sensation. So, you know, I don't even know what the question is. I guess I'm just...
No, I think I understand the question. I mean, right. I think your question is there's this sense, and really this is the sense of social media now, of anything that, you know, you don't exist unless you are on Google, unless you have your SEO, unless someone puts in your name and finds you on LinkedIn and Twitter and Facebook and Google Plus and YouTube and all these other places. And so I guess the question would be the volume of content is also this sense that you have to have a transparent life and always be tweeting, always be putting stuff on Instagram, always be interacting with your fans and kind of find a way to build an audience through volume. Or, you know, there's kind of that alternative, which, you know, maybe Zay Frank is an example. I mean, of course, he's legendary, but, you know, I'm not sure that he's like doing daily vlogs. He's doing specific weekly videos and they often become viral. And so do you do kind of try and create a series of one hit wonders, or do you really try and just pound away at it every day and do the daily vlog?
That's it.
I don't know. I would say the former, I guess, has worked for me, trying to do the quality over quantity.
Right.
If what you're doing is high quality and distinct enough, then it has a potential to be viral and take off on its own. So that's the strategy that works for me. And I guess you have to kind of figure out what works for you.
Yeah, I think it's a personal choice based on kind of who you are. Are you someone who Yeah, I mean, there's almost like the cult of personality versus the creative, you know, side of things. Yeah, and good
so,
point.
So Tate, how do you deal with the incredible? I mean, my God, you've been around since 07. How do you deal with the constant YouTube changes? I mean, now the views you may have gotten a few years ago are now kind of taken by all the eyeballs, and same thing happens to all of us
because Google is de-emphasizing search. You know,
that's weird, right?
Well, yeah, it is. I mean, Google is really trying to simplify discovery on YouTube, so it becomes more like television, and trying to automate that process. And in that process, a lot of legacy talents are kind of becoming downranked and not as easy to discover and not as easy to syndicate your content to your audience. You know, I still think that there are certainly ways for videos to go viral, you know, with Reddit and just getting it out there in the press. But it is harder to build an audience on YouTube now, because you'll see great stuff that just it's not able to get outside of that circle of your mom and your friends and whoever you're able to email it to, and grow in the way that perhaps it was in 2008, 2009, 2010. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what the answer to that is. I'd like to hear more of an answer about audience growth and really building an audience from the platform itself, from YouTube, and what their viewpoint is on that. Because there are a lot of people struggling.
Yeah, and there's a person who's just here. Let me find who said this. Young Geek One says, "Being a teen, I'm late to the YouTube scene. I think you cannot become big anymore. Only stay as small as a small YouTuber. Only music videos are going viral these days." And there's kind of a sense that, hey, if you're expecting to try to make a career in YouTube now, it's so difficult to be discovered, not only just by the amount of volume of YouTube videos, but the algorithm, now the way that YouTube is set up. And it's very discouraging for people, I would say. And, I mean, do you have any tips for someone who is breaking into this space now?
Yeah, I mean, I think that people still, I mean, this is very cliche, but people still go for authenticity. And, you know, when you are building a YouTube channel, when you're building any brand, you are ultimately kind of trying to build, it's an odd way to put it, but, you know, kind of a church of you, a temple or a space where your brand and your authenticity and who you authentically are can thrive. And the people who do blow up on YouTube, because there are still, you know, you still see, if you look at VidStatsX or whatnot, it does still happen. It's rarer, it's more exceptional, but there are still channels blowing up. And oftentimes that, to me, really seems to be tied to authenticity. People who come across as very authentic. And the other thing I'll say about YouTube success is, and Lamar will probably agree with me being in LA, is that you meet successful people or people who are successful on YouTube, like Jenna Marbles or William Johnson and whatnot, in person. And what they do on YouTube, it's not an act. It is actually who they are.
Right.
And, you know, so it's not like they turn the camera on and become something else. They turn the camera on and that's a piece of them going out on the internet.
Yeah, they're documenting their life.
Yeah. And so YouTube is necessarily documentary. I would say that every success story on YouTube is pretty much not someone trying to create an act or a shtick or something different than how they would live their lives every day, but finding how to make the way they live their lives every day interesting and share that with other people.
Very good. I think this is a good transition into our first article that was really talking about this chart that TubeFilter came up with. It's a very unique chart. We know about the top 100 on YouTube as far as channels and, you know, Smosh and Jenna Marbles. But this chart from TubeFilter really shows the top 50 most viewed YouTube channels. And they're going to do this on a weekly basis. And I just kind of want to get your feedback on some of these channels, because a lot of them are either music or they're gaming. And I know you're really kind of into that gaming aspect, you know, PewDiePie and things like that. Talk about how gaming has become this top thing. Is it because the person is real and is talking to the audience and relating with them? Is that what's making it so great?
Yeah, I mean, if you look at someone like Toby Turner, Toby Gaines is a perfect example of, you know, Toby is just, he has this amazing brain, this amazing ability to create interesting high energy content for hours on end. I mean, if I tried to be Toby Turner, I'd wear myself out after about 5 minutes. But, you know, he's able to do that. You know, it's an interesting testimony that people find watching video game walkthroughs sometimes more interesting than playing the actual games. And I think that's a good question. What is that sense of being a captive audience to someone else experiencing something that, you know, you find a vicarious joy in that, perhaps more than doing it yourself? And I don't know. I mean, I would most compare it to, you know, PewDiePie and these video game channels blowing up to when I was a kid. You know, my brother is 6 years older than me. So I would always, when I was like 8 years old, watch my brother and his friends playing video games. And it was kind of like this experience with, like, it made me feel older. It made me feel cool. I would just love sitting there in the dark watching my older brother and his friends play video games for hours on end. And that's almost kind of what's happening with these YouTube channels with Toby Games and PewDiePie, where it's almost like I feel like there are these younger kids and it's like watching their older sibling play video games. It's that sense of cool, that sense of feeling a cool, relatable personality. Perhaps for kids or audience members who might not have that in their actual lives, you can go on YouTube and experience that.
Never would have thought about it like that. That is pretty amazing. Like, what do you think accounts for so many music channels? I obvious. It's the celebrity, but what is your take? You have Psy still number one.
Is it Google feeding them subscribers?
Yeah, that's pretty much where I'm trying to get.
Accounts for some of them, but of course you had Vevo, and at one point I think when Vevo split off somewhere in 2009, Vevo, for I guess those who don't know, was the YouTube for music labels that split off. And at some point, it was a pretty big portion of YouTube's monetized traffic, I think more than half, around, you know, 2010 or so. And I don't know. I mean, it's music, I guess, is kind of that example of, you know, maybe this is debatable that I'm going to get in trouble saying this, but quality over quantity. But it is definitely more specific videos going viral and getting tens and perhaps hundreds of millions of views versus doing the daily vlog like Shay Chrome.
Gotcha.
Right. Gotcha. Oh. And if it's funny because if I look at this list, there's a lot of people who are associated with a network. I mean, looking at the top ones, Psy is a network. You know, PewDiePie is in a network. Ellen, Sky Does Minecraft. And you can see some. I mean, do you think that signing to a network is kind of a requirement to be in the top? And this is a question for everyone in the top, you know, 50. I mean, there's only very few that are not, and they're huge companies like BuzzFeed or there's the BBC and things like that that aren't in a network.
I think it helps to have a library and an archive, honestly, because those are the top 50 viewed, aren't they? Not the top 50 subscribed.
Right.
So there's in that particular list the implication that there might be an access to a high quantity of videos, where if you are a company and, okay, you have 80,000-100,000 videos in your archives and, you know, you pay someone to upload them and have reasonable SEO, you know, getting on the top viewed channel list is not necessarily a metric of user engagement so much as, you know, how big your library is and how good your SEO is, if you have these assets that you're just transferring to YouTube. So I'm not sure what this particular list does to indicate current user engagement in that regard.
Also, does top viewed channel mean maybe that they're also one of the ones that aren't subscribed to enough? Because if you're getting views on the channel, that means that they're probably haven't subscribed. Well, I mean, and then also the subscribe feature is a little bit broken, but that means you're going to the actual channel page to view what's happening on the channel.
Yeah, that means their videos are being viewed, but Jenna Marbles has more subscribers.
Right.
Smosh has more subscribers.
Right. And those subscribers, I mean, Smosh has, you know, 6-7 year old subscribers that probably aren't around anymore.
Oh, that sounded morbid.
I mean, come on. Yeah, most YouTubers, I mean, they only last a few years. Yeah.
What's interesting about Smosh is that they're really only getting, they're getting around the same percentage as an average 20 to 40% max of their subscribers are watching, usually around 20, 25%. Smosh's success has always been in their blog or getting it viral and embedded. Right. On other places. That's where these views are really coming from. That Ellen's show does come from YouTube, but it comes from embeddable content in so many different places.
Yeah. Yeah. That's natural because of the way that sketch comedy works is you see something mm-hmm. that's funny and then you share it. Absolutely.
Absolutely.
When you want to get
tremendous website presence.
So yeah, they do. They've
watched Fred Wong, a lot of top YouTubers actually putting their audiences on a separate website that, you know, is all in its own right, a successful social network.
Right, yeah. Right, with their own email list and things like that.
Yeah, well, that's always something I think Leo has said, you know, you should always try to have your audience in one location, you know, where they could be transportable. The worst thing you do is rely 100% on YouTube and make that your base because, you know, what happens if you want to move to something else or YouTube goes down and gets stuck and you can't communicate with your audience. It's much better to have your own site. You know, that's why, you know, he encouraged me to make one and that's why I did. For that reason, you don't want to have all your eggs in one basket. Definitely not in YouTube's basket.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, what do you think about Phil DeFranco selling everything to Revision3/Discovery? What is that all about?
It's definitely putting your eggs in one basket.
Yeah, that's quite the opposite, isn't it?
I mean, yeah, it looks like
What happened? They gave him a pile of money.
Oh, most likely.
He said, fine, whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. Whatever. So not only his Sexy Phil channel, but SourceFed and his vlog channel. And I think he has a movie or games channel. Anything he owns, basically. And in exchange, he's pretty much a VP of Discovery Communications and you know, vice president of his own network. I want to ask Tay about this because this is a trend, and the other story is really about, you know, Smosh getting into TV. And we heard about Ray William Johnson doing TV. When you see these YouTubers who have a certain time limit on YouTube, you know, you think about music, people who sing. And they sing for a while, then they become producers. And then they kind of go in the background and they do amazing work. Do you see this trend happening on YouTube where they're just kind of starting to shift away? That they see maybe a downturn you know what I'm asking.
With someone who has a successful career on YouTube, the channel peaks. What's the next step? How do you get into administration or owning a company? Right. What's the step after that? I mean, Phil DeFranco, if you think about it, he's an amazing story. You know, think of all the people Phil DeFranco's age who, you know, got into debt for college, got into debt for, you know, graduate school, getting an MBA, you know, paying student loans for 15, 20 years and are still today unemployed or struggling to find work. And Phil, I watched his Draw My Life video, drops out of college.
Right.
Says he's going to do YouTube full time.
Needs $500 to get back home.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Phil has a story if you haven't watched his Draw My Life. But, you know, and now he's an executive with Discovery. And, you know, it really means that, you know, content is the new college. You know, instead of the undergrad degree and the MBA, he made content on YouTube. And that content became what separated him from all the MBAs, from all the people with the great LinkedIn connections and whatnot. He said, hey, I have a brand. I have multiple brands. I've built traffic. I've built an audience, you know, actually doing the work of building that audience zoomed him past all these other people. So I think that kind of goes into the earlier question of can YouTube become something? Is YouTube something that can lead to success? Well, Phil DeFranco is an amazing story.
Right. Yeah. He learned under fire. And then and on top of that, I don't know if Phil really ever had a super viral hit like we were talking about earlier. He just constantly made content all the time. And rose up the ranks.
And some of it was very, very honest content in terms of like not necessarily being PG rated.
Right.
Phil has always been a very frank vlogger. So I think it also shows that you can have a little bit of honesty, be a little bit surly. But if the numbers are there, you can develop other brands and take it to another level.
Yeah, that's one of the things with news. News is very one off, and you know, no one knows that better than the Twit Network. You know, you have your news thing, and then it's no one's going to watch it 6 months from now. But Phil didn't care about that. He grinded them out, you know, day after day, week after week, and that's a good model to think about. Just being a YouTuber, do you go for, you know, is my content going to be viable in a year? Which is kind of the direction I'm looking at as I get older.
Or that's a great way.
Or do you just do one-offs and maybe one or two will hit and you're satisfied with that?
Right.
You know, there's two school of thoughts for that.
Right. Yeah. And he's keeping it local, still here on the internet. He's been bought by a big company, but he's still with Revision 3. Now, then there was a story about Smosh maybe doing the opposite and heading in the television direction, reported on by Variety and Alloy Digital, that they may be cutting a deal to do something with television, which seems interesting.
Now I'm gonna be the controversial one because Tay is friends with them. I am not, so I can ask this.
I know them, but we're not close friends. But yeah.
Yeah. So I'm wondering, can their type of funny be funny on TV? You know, I saw them at the comedy. I saw them at the comedy show thing.
What was the thing they did on the comedy show?
They did a 30-second blip that wasn't funny at all. They were reading from a teleprompter, a couple of jokes.
So is the story that they are seeking or that they are talking? Because if it's their seeking, yeah, sure. Well, so am I. But if it's their if there's somebody actually talking, I think you're going to see over the next couple of years, you're going to see television talk to a lot of people like Phil DeFranco. I mean, remember, Discovery, Revision 3 is really Discovery, and Discovery really is TV. You're going to see a lot of TV companies desperate trying to figure out what the hell's going on over on YouTube. And why can't we get 18 to 24-year-olds watching TV? Yeah. So you're going to see, like, you know, like Annoying Orange and Fred Figglesworth. You're going to see more of that. It's not going to work necessarily. TV doesn't really understand any of this. Frankly, I don't feel like I understand what makes it something work on YouTube or not. It seems completely a crapshoot to me.
Well, there's no method.
Well, I think the predictability, though, is that, and Google doesn't always want to admit this, because Google wants to sell YouTube as something where you can effectively advertise to every age range, you know, 40, 50, 60-year-olds. But in terms of eyeball time,
it's
the
kids.
Views on YouTube are still very, very kids. Young.
But that's what not every advertiser, Cadillac and, you know, Mercedes don't care, but most advertisers are finding it's very hard to reach the 18 to 24-year-old, and that's the presumption is that's because they're watching YouTube. Yeah. And if we can only somehow capture some of that gold, we would do it.
I saw a really controversial video yesterday that was called Why YouTube Sucks. It was by Steve Green Comedy. He was being honest, but one of the things he mentioned is that people like Smosh or even, you know, myself or anybody who does content like this, we're children's entertainers. And he said people, adults who are in the Louis C.K. and
I can assure you that's what worries YouTube.
Absolutely. We're not, are we marketable to an older audience or are we just catering to kids? And it's really something that it made me really open my eyes and say, hey, you know, I just came from teaching and now I'm entertaining kids on YouTube. Uh-huh. And you can't rely on analytics. These kids lie and say, yeah, I'm 50. They're 12. It's a lot of kids watching us.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Well, let me just watch some Smosh because I haven't seen any Smosh. Now, would you say this is aimed at adults or children?
Children. If you look at the type of humor, there's a lot of...
Well, first of all, I find it interesting that AT&T has a 30-second ad right up front.
With children.
But it's aimed at iPhone buyers, which is really not 18 to 24-year-olds.
I'm not getting your audio.
I know, I'm hearing it.
Okay.
I'll make it route out to it.
Sure.
But let's see if I can skip. No, and this is on Smosh's webpage. This is not on YouTube. So that's interesting. Smosh is selling these ads direct, and they're not letting you skip the ad at all.
Right.
Because they know people are going to watch it. They can get away with it.
Right. Is that a second ad?
I'm sick of it already. Let's go somewhere else.
No.
All right. Dan, you're not getting my audio, so I don't care anymore.
Yeah.
But this is obviously not aimed at an adult.
No. I mean,
she was.
Perhaps. Smosh. absolutely. This content is made for middle schoolers, and the comedy still appeals to most people because it's comedy. So you're going to get sort of that low brow, like, hey, this, you know, Reminds me of Duty. Ha ha ha.
Well, it's interesting that Fred Figglesworth and Annoying Orange are arguably the two big mainstream successes. Those are both kids' programs.
The first time that I ever heard of Fred Figglesworth is from my 14-year-old nephew.
Well, no adult would watch somebody going...
It's Figglehorn.
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 I only said Figglehorn.
I
want to
say Figgle something else, so I just... Figgle that guy.
Exactly. Yeah, so, I mean, could you see Smosh on Cartoon Network? Could you see Smosh signing a deal like Annoying Orange? And, you know, all of the... It's almost kind of like at a point where the brand becomes so big that the platform is...
It doesn't even matter. Brand. That's right.
So, I mean, the goal is just to expand the brand to as many platforms as you possibly can.
Yeah. But somebody in the chat said something interesting. Why market to middle schoolers who have no money when you should be marketing to adults? But the same thing is, why do they do it in Saturday morning cartoons?
No.
You know, because the kids will go bug the adults. It's a pretty good market to.
Yeah. Tell Disney that the young market is gone and that there isn't any money in young markets.
There's money in it. If they want an iPhone or a new Android phone, they're going to get it.
Right. Let's check out some viral videos.
Oh, let's.
Hey.
So this week we have one from, now you mentioned last week that a lot of our viral videos are also campaigns.
So I don't want to see any more. I think we should watch Samuel L. Jackson saying mofo a lot.
No?
I don't think so.
You know, I actually have one that might be pretty funny. But, well, we have a
That's a nice story. Raising money for Alzheimer's. He asked people to donate and he picked a winner. I think he was on Twitter. To record a monologue for them. And he did record a monologue that said, I'm getting out of acting and I'm going to go fight crime. I'm going to be a vigilante. And he basically shouted a lot of stuff that old men like me shout at people when they're on their lawn. It was great. with a lot of profanity interlaced.
That's great.
Great video. I just described the whole thing. You know.
Perfect. Yeah. You know, I actually have one that I'm throwing out of nowhere that Samuel L. Jackson reminded me of. This is the TV edit of Snakes on a Plane.
Clear the snakes out of the cockpit. Yeah, clear the snakes out of the cockpit. Yeah. Enough is enough. I have had it with these monkey fighting snakes on this Monday to Friday plane. Everybody strap in.
Okay, so question
is... I love how they do that on TV. That's so good.
This monkey fighting snakes on this Monday to Friday plane.
Yeah.
So, question, real or fake? Because I don't know. I assume that it's real.
No, that's how they do it in TV.
Okay.
I don't know. Oh, you mean, is it real? Was it ever on TV for real?
Yeah, I mean, like, did someone edit that and be like, hey, it's the TV version? Or is that actually the TV version? I don't own a TV, so.
I think that's some vigilante editing.
That's, I would suspect. Yes, I would suspect. Yeah.
All cool. Right, how about our videos? What we got, Chad?
We got this Windows 8 multitasking video. Let's check.
I don't know why I love this video, but I hate it at the same time. It's so awful, but it's so good.
Is it quiet?
Oh, yeah, they're just talking low. So these guys are about
There's a whole bunch of weird Windows 8 videos out of Asia.
Yeah, it's like, what is...
This is about Windows 8 multitasking.
Okay.
There's a ping pong one. There's a makeup one. They're just very strange.
Okay, so he's playing a piano, and
you can hear something.
He's playing ping pong with his butt, and the piano with his hands. Okay. Both are.
Oh, they both are.
Yeah. I think this is really happening.
We played these on Windows Weekly a few weeks ago. There's actually a series of four or five of them, and we can't figure out. I brought Tony Wang in because he's a Chinese speaker. Because some of it's Chinese, some of it's Korean, some of it's Japanese. It's just unclear.
So it's just general purpose.
Strange Asian ads.
Okay.
Huh. They're not showing them in the U.S.
So would you buy a Windows 8 tablet
Play ping pong with the paddle?
You know what? I really wanted to be able to play the piano and play ping pong with my butt at the same time.
It's not for us.
Assuming that was CGI, those weren't real ping pong.
And yeah.
No. There are people who can actually do that.
Right.
Oh.
They all had Windows 8 tablets.
It's all about the mounting.
What is this advertising lately? I don't see how that relates to the average consumer. They're like, oh, I'm going to go buy a Windows 8 tablet. Thank you, Microsoft.
Well, to me, what this points up is another very good use of YouTube, which is not created for YouTube, but as a way for people to share weird stuff that they've found in other sources. And a lot of what's on YouTube lately, a lot of what I see on YouTube lately is historic video. I just was watching there's a whole channel of old New York videos.
Mm-hmm.
That 1933 video of New York. It's beautiful. It's that's a good use of YouTube, in my opinion. Because, sure. but it doesn't see YouTube as a content creation channel, and I don't think Google likes this. This is the last thing they want because basically it's just using their bandwidth for free. They're freeloaders, but it's frankly a very good use for YouTube. I think
right,
mm-hmm. right. I mean, that's what most people think of YouTube as. I mean, they have a huge hill to climb.
That's the problem.
If they want, and this was the bet that they always made, is that if you go there for your cat videos, one day you'll go there for your TV videos. And
for your news.
Yeah,
news
for your news, for everything. For all, you'll just go to YouTube for video, and it won't matter if it's one type or another. And I don't know, there might be a little bit of backlash on
my
kids, type of video.
My kids' school bans YouTube. You know, they block it on their filtering. Right. And I think, frankly, this is exactly the reason you shouldn't ban YouTube, because the amount of historic stuff that's on here is fabulous.
Absolutely. But Leo, here's the question. How do you find it? And that the discovery on YouTube is still some of the worst. Like, how would I find that great historical video?
Well,
they're not going to promote that.
No, and this is another thing that Google doesn't like. But really what YouTube is being used as by, I would say, the majority of YouTube users is as a place to store video so they can then link to it, as Ellen DeGeneres does, from their website or their Tumblr or their Twitter account.
Right.
It's just a repository.
Free distribution.
They don't have to make servers of their own or anything. It's genius. And so they're not really content creators. They just put their content there.
Right.
For free. Yeah. I don't think
so once you've learned about this, for instance, old New York channel, then you subscribe to it and you're going to see old New York videos and it's fabulous.
Awesome.
You know, but that's not something that's going to make YouTube a lot of money.
I mean, their bet is you go to YouTube so much that, the day that you see, I could watch Fast and Furious 6, I could just rent it right now for $3. You know, is that turnover ever going to happen? I doubt it. I don't think that you're going to get someone who went to YouTube to watch old New York videos for free is going to want to shell out $7 to watch or rent a movie.
And as an example, I've been searching YouTube for old New York and have not been able to find it. But if I search the World Wide Web for old New York, I immediately find articles about this YouTube video pointing me right back to the YouTube channel.
Interesting.
Well, so, I mean, YouTube is, the second largest search engine? I mean, I think the third is Amazon. I mean, they definitely have an issue. And on top of that, the videos, you can't parse videos like you can parse a web page or links. You know, can't. Go ahead.
I think the interesting point, though, about the old New York videos are that's something you want to watch on a big screen. You want to watch that on, your laptop screen or even your 32-inch monitor screen or whatever larger format you have. Whereas Jenna Marbles, Ray William Johnson, successful people, you want to watch them on your
great
cell phone.
For mobile. Yep.
They're great for mobile. They're great for tablets.
I agree.
So it's like you wouldn't be wanting to watch the old New York video on your cell phone. You want to take that to a larger screen and really appreciate it. And so it's kind of, I think the other kind of identity crisis of YouTube is you have the most popular content on YouTube from PewDiePie to Jenna Marbles being content that is really best consumed on mobile platforms, on cell phones, on tablets, and the content that would be best for a large television format like Old New York, stuff that's like CSI, is generally not as successful. Sometimes there are exceptions like Freddie Wong, but for the most part, it's stuff that's best consumed on a small screen.
Well, this was published a week ago. It has 724,000 views. And all of those, by the way, none of those come from YouTube. They're all generated by the outside, by the Huffington Post and New York Daily News.
Yeah.
So what do you think YouTube, what do you think Google/YouTube wants as opposed to what it's getting?
I mean, they...
Do they want they mobile want, video, Tay?
Well, I don't know. You know what? They want advertisers. And this sort of footage, if they can be able to parse that this is clean and family friendly, and then they could put advertisements on the side of it, they'd be happy, in my opinion.
No, you're wrong. They can't make enough money on it.
I think mobile is it. I mean, you look at these even developing nations or more developed or as developed, excuse me, like in China or Japan. Everybody's carrying around a cell phone. India, mobile is the next frontier, and if they crack mobile, that is the next cash cow. I just firmly believe that. So we need to make our content for mobile. The problem is, how do you get people to invest in the ads, or does that ad platform work with pre-rolls?
No, I completely agree with what you're saying, Lamar. I think the real crisis is that you have this whole industry in Hollywood built around creating content for the television, for the big screen.
Absolutely.
And so, you're spending $200 million to make a movie, $5 million an episode for a show like CSI. Then Jenna Marbles comes along with the webcam on her MacBook, and she looks just as good as CSI on a cell phone as, a show spending $5 million an episode. And she's more authentic, and she has shorter episodes, and, she's more hip to what that new medium is. So it's kind of this question of, where is the capital in entertainment invested in these large, bulky consumption formats? What's going to happen? Is there going to be a divestment, an exodus from creating content for large formats and rushing to mobile, or making sure that stuff like The Walking Dead and stuff that has a huge presence in a large screen is also stuff that really appeals to cell phone consumers?
But what did YouTube push in the new fronts? If you want to know what YouTube's up to, look at the new fronts, right? Because this is where YouTube, in effect, says, here's our strategy. This is where they go to advertisers. It's their version of the upfront that broadcast media does. They sell at the beginning of the year, they sell their new shows, mm-hmm. and they say, okay, you want to buy ad time on these. And what did they push on the new fronts at YouTube? They push stars. They push YouTube stars. Big time, right? I think they see their future as personality driven. Now, I mean, it changes every 6 months, by the way. I don't think they have a coherent strategy.
They actually admitted they made a mistake in going after celebrities on TV. Yeah. It's like, oh, we realize we should be going after YouTube stars.
I'm homegrown stars, yep.
They put a million, what is it, a million dollars or $2 million?
$300 million.
100 channels.
Yeah.
And 100 channels. And they got nothing back except. Only ones that were successful for the most part were the ones who were already YouTubers. SourceFed.
Right.
A few other channels, the Vlog Brothers, who were doing their stuff.
Real Celebrity did not transfer. Everyone loves Shaquille O'Neal.
But nobody watches him on YouTube.
Nobody watches his YouTube channel.
So at the new fronts this year, which was just a month ago, it was all about Phil DeFranco and the Jenna Marbles and the YouTube celebrities. And mm-hmm. I think that's smart.
Yep, exactly.
But that's the plan this year. It'll be different next year because they haven't cracked it yet. I don't think they've cracked it yet.
Right.
And the reason I said you're wrong, Chad, is because, I'm looking at this New York video is from the Romano Archives, whose website, by the way, is down because they use too much bandwidth. So it's all about free bandwidth. And this is exactly what YouTube doesn't want. They can put ads on it. It's too expensive for them. They can't they can't make enough money in it. What they need to do, I think, and what they want to do is sell more premium priced ads to advertisers when they can say, this is a specific demographic, this is Jenna Marbles, this is where you're going to make, we're going to sell this to you. I think they realize they cannot sell the run a schedule, the ROS style ads, because they just don't make enough. They can't make enough money.
And that's a good point because also those ads will only show up if the YouTube, the person who uploaded the video decides to put them up.
Right.
They could use the bandwidth for absolutely free and decide not to monetize those videos. And for an archive, that's what they're going to do. Yeah. So that's very good point.
That's such a huge savings for them to be able to do that, too. So
on top of that, they get extra things like being able to play videos on mobile or iPads where Flash can't play. Like if they had made their own Flash player and hosted it all, you get amazing. I mean, you get so
maybe there's a public service that YouTube is doing, too.
Right. I mean, I would say anyone who needs to put videos up online, put them on YouTube. It doesn't make any sense to put them anywhere else.
It's a good deal right now.
Right.
Yeah. And anybody who's doing anywhere else is just, they're doing it out of spite. I was watching something on
Pando. That's why I want to move all our videos to Vimeo.
Yeah, Pando Daily, and they were using their own player, and that's like, and it was crappy. It was breaking.
Vimeo's good, though, right?
Oh, yeah.
Vimeo's a good site.
I'm moving everything to Vimeo because YouTube keeps screwing us, frankly.
Are you being serious, or are you?
No, well, nobody will let me, but I want to.
Yeah.
I went to Lisa. I said, can we move everything off of YouTube? She said, no. Please? No. So I'm stuck. But I would. If it were up to me, you know me. I hold a grudge.
Well, I mean, YouTube is also very much kind of this mystery. They keep a lot of the operation of the YouTube website mysterious. Yes, there are a lot of statistics they could publish about exactly how your content syndicates on the site.
They don't want
in
that.
Terms
they
of
don't want us
what
to know
the pages
that.
Are, yeah. what the impressions are, and what. So they don't want us to know that. So it's kind of like this Rube Goldberg machine. Right. And that's part of the frustration that a lot of people, especially people who are struggling to grow an audience, have with YouTube. It's like, tell me when my subscribers log on to the site. Tell me how many impressions the video actually gets when it syndicates through the mechanism of the site. And it's just this man behind the curtain mystery that YouTube isn't really willing to disclose.
Exactly.
Exactly. So, Tay, you've been awesome, and we're going to make you now give us a tip. Even though you gave us hundreds already. But what I want you to do is focus the tip on, you know, either the viewer or as a creator. I know you prepared us. I don't know where you're going to come from, but your insights have been amazing today. And so thank you for that just ahead of time. But what final tip could you give us for YouTube?
Do you want like a mechanical tip in terms of just like something?
You were prepped for this, sir.
Oh my god! No, this is coming off on the fly.
You know that tip we? You know that tip?
I told you to.
You know the one we talked about, Tay? You know the one, that one.
Yeah, make whatever you want. Come off the fly. You've been on here long enough. You can figure it out. You got 10 seconds.
10 seconds. I still believe in SEO. I still believe in reviewing current events and stuff that is still big in search, and that, you know, that's not as dominant a way to grow your audience as it used to be, but definitely doing movie reviews, stuff that's popular, like Game of Thrones and whatnot, trying to get in that SEO. And also, this is something Freddie Wong is very big on, is whatever your specific type of content is, find a community that is into that type of content. Find a subreddit, find a website, find a forum, find a niche that you can promote that particular brand of content to. And then they'll do a lot of the work of promoting it and sharing it on Facebook and being engaged. So it's kind of like building Chris Brillo's 1,000 active fans, where he wrote an article this year. Everyone is really trying to get 1,000 people to just share everything, retweet everything, pass it along. And so really finding a specific niche community that's active and engaged that ties in with your videos is also a great suggestion.
That's a very
I think it's thing. The only suggestion. I think you nailed it.
Yep.
And
that was
this
great
is from a guy,
on the fly.
This is from a guy who knows you don't get 91 million views unless you've got those people doing that for you.
Right.
Yep. Absolutely.
And it also keeps you going on those days when you're down.
Almost definitely. I mean, I think YouTube becomes something that, you know, I always say content creates the person you want to be.
Yeah. There you go.
Where, you create content on YouTube to create the life you want to live and create the person you want to live. And I think, honestly, people are often motivated in that regard beyond traffic. I mean, you look at some successful YouTubers, these people don't really ever have to work again or keep putting content out there at the rate they do it, but they're passionate about it because they love living that life and what it does to them as a person. So content really creates the person you want to be.
That's beautiful.
Sorry.
Says Tay's on day as he drives off in his Bentley.
So what have you been working on in the past few months that we can send people to check out what you're doing now?
Always putting stuff on my YouTube channel. I'm in a little bit of a hiatus, but, oh gosh, you know, the comedy.
Oh, what is this? what is this video?
Oh my God. Oh, don't play that.
Let's skip through a little bit.
Wait, should we?
Go up to the Lamar section.
Whoa.
Oh, what?
Oh.
What?
Crazy. Oh, no. That's not on my channel now.
You've got
that?
A sunburn.
Wow. Oh, no. Uh-oh. That's your channel.
Put the audio on. I want to hear this.
Is that on YouTube?
Who put that on
YouTube? Was this your street performance when you were younger? Is this how you made living when you were younger? This is eating baby food.
Multiple YouTube challenges. I was supposed to be at this, and I got sick. I couldn't make it. So,
there's all different YouTube channels.
There's different YouTubers in the background.
Eating baby food.
Weird. Yeah, if you could skip to the glorious milk part, that'd be awesome. We have to leave with that.
Chocolate barf. I ate some baby food, and then...
This part?
Oh, no. No,
no, no mix orange juice and milk. No. No, don't mix orange juice and milk. No.
Oh, no, it looks
what
like...
What is that? What is that an egg? Right. Oh, you're making a... yeah, that's a hangover cure.
Keep going. Keep going. It gets better.
Tell me when to stop. Tell me when to stop.
What's the? What are you wearing around your neck?
It's a bib. It's a bib.
Rubber bib?
It's a bib, so I don't...
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh.
Oh, my goodness.
I think
that wasn't me.
YouTube did this.
That was some other, like, wow.
That's funny.
That was the Taizan Day stunt double.
Wow.
Very good. Well, everyone should go there and subscribe immediately. Immediately.
That's the kind of stuff you see.
Absolutely. Lamar, if you're still available, if you're still here with us, what have you been doing the last week here?
Oh, my God. Okay, so I did last week I did a very rude interview with one of my friends, which was turned out to be a pretty interesting video. It was all in fun, but yeah, I was very, very rude to him. And that was I think that's kind of the only big highlight. However, next week, which is tomorrow, I plan to go on a five video streak.
Are you going to do a cleanse? Uh-oh. A cleanse?
Five
doing that?
5 day finally. Binder of videos.
Yeah. No, but it's going to be really good topics. I will be revealing my new phone that I'm using now probably on Wednesday, because a lot of people have been asking what I'm using and I've been ignoring them because I've been waiting for this video.
See, so I give that crap away. I should really be holding on to that, huh?
Oh, yeah.
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 Absolutely. So you can see that. And also this week, I'm going to Vlogger Fair, and that's Chris.
Oh, that's fun. Yeah.
Thing that's happening. So I'll be on the road Thursday through Monday for that. And Chris, I think it's going to be a great event. You know, he was on a couple weeks ago, and it's going to be a fun week. So I look forward to it. What about you, Chad? What are you doing?
Well, this last week, I uploaded another vlog. It's the second vlog in the new reboot of making videos again for this show.
I watched it. It was really good in your kitchen, dude.
Yeah, it is. I literally had to clean up my kitchen just to make this vlog because my house is a mess. But it talks about things like my hair, as you can see right there, and a moment in life where I realized that, you know, I'm mortal, and I ask kind of the community to jump in with their own stories about situations in your life that really kind of change your outlook on the rest of your life. I talked about the first time that I ever passed out on, you know, not from being drunk, but from dehydration, and how that really changed my perspective on
life. Not drinking enough.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And so I asked people to kind of pitch in and share their own stories. And that's what I did this last week.
Excellent. You want to know what I did?
What's that?
I watched Tasting Call Me Maybe. Boy, that was fun. What a good version of this. Can you get my audio at all?
No.
Damn.
That's perfect.
That's just how it should be.
Call me maybe.
There you go.
There we go. Woo! Golly. Audio's working great.
There's the audio right there.
Call me maybe.
One thing we did not mention, June 6th is when they turn on the one channel for everyone. So if you have
not... Like it or not. Like it or not.
Oh, yeah, like it or not. They said they're not. So, yes, they are. So like it or not. So get your designs ready because it's coming. And I think it'll be a nice quick burst of new subscribers. I think all channels are going to benefit, at least initially, because you'll see all these subscribe everywhere. And I think it'll be good for us.
I think
as far as discovery. I look forward to it.
Cool.
Cool, cool. Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Lamar Wilson. Thank you, Chad. And thanks especially to our very special guest, Taizan Day.
Yes.
It's been really great meeting you, Tay.
Please subscribe to him.
Huge fan. Tayface.com or YouTube.com/TAYZANDOZONDAY. I've completely messed it up now. You can figure it out. Just search for Chocolate Rain. Thank you, Tay. Or call me maybe. And thank you for joining us. We do this week in YouTube right after the radio show, right before Twit, every Sunday afternoon at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern Time, 2200 UTC on twit.tv. Please join us live, if not on demand, audio and video available everywhere except YouTube, where we are still blocked. Thank you very much. We'll see you next time on This Week in Sons of Bitches.